Hare Krishna. Good morning, dear devotees. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. I'm sorry I'm a little bit late. We had some technical difficulties, but they were fixed quite quickly. We will read from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 4. Excuse me. Yes, chapter 4, second volume. I believe today's verse, we begin with text 199. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tai Satchidananda Ganard Ashishai Shri Krishna Devasya Gita Vatarai Gyato Vitaritvam Ritir Pipsam Ye Tai Star Mahatvara Madhurai Vishishaha. And so it is with his incarnations. They are also non-different from Sri Krishna Dev, for they are complete embodiments of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But although Krishna is considered non-different from his plenary expansions, he is also distinct from them, and not only because he is their source, but also because he has his own sweet perfections. Commentary. Sri Krishna, the Lord of Goloka, is acclaimed in the Puranas and other Vedic scriptures for being especially sweet. The sweetness found in him is not fully present in Lord Narayan or any of his other expansions. Of course, Krishna is different from his avatars because he is their source. Yet he is still further different as the supreme, all-attractive object of love. As implied here by the word api, it is only natural that Krishna be the original personality of Godhead, and that all other forms of God emanate from him. But Krishna is special, not only as the avatari, but also as an avatara. He alone is the source of all incarnations of God, and only he displays such wonderful, charming pastimes when he descends to the material world. The Puranas give evidence of those pastimes, recounting many of Sri Krishna's unequaled exploits. The jivas allowed to associate with Lord Krishna in his abode are surely aware that he, being the supreme controller of all existence, is much greater than they. What most impresses Krishna's devotees, however, is his infinitely variegated sweetness. By seeing his beauty and other glories, they are constantly assured that he is different from everyone else. Only by this deep appreciation of Krishna's supremacy can his most fortunate devotees sustain their exalted love for him and share intimate exchanges with him in the ecstatic tastes of transcendental rasa. Om Agyana Timirandasya Giranjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangam Mangayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurundina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari Pastachade Satarane Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gauravakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'll start by reading the last verse that we did. These devotees are equal to the Lord in being embodiments of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, just like Him. Yet Sri Krishna has a certain inconceivable mystic potency that attracts these devotees to the sweet ecstasy of worshiping Him and makes them always think that they are servants at His lotus feet. Last class, we spoke about the distinctions between the served and the servant, and what makes them always eternally, uniquely distinct, although they all have forms of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, including the Supreme Lord, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Sat, Chit, Ananda, Vigraha. Still, there is something about Krishna that makes Him special. And what is this speciality about Krishna? That is discussed to some degree in today's verse. Although it was discussed also last time that Krishna is the served and all others are serving Him. But there's more. And it's described here in the commentary that there's a certain quality of Krishna which makes Him all attractive. In other words, there's something about Him that attracts everyone's mind to Him. The word here that's used in the commentary, it can be, I looked at it a few times, it can be misleading because the word that is used is Krishna's supremacy, and the tendency is to think that if one is conscious of Krishna's supremacy, then how can one experience the sweetness of the relationship with Krishna? It immediately would put one into a mood of awe and reverence. So, as I've understood, supremacy here suggests that it's what's stated in the previous verse, that what most impresses Krishna's devotees, however, is His infinitely variegated sweetness by seeing His beauty and other glories. They are constantly assured that He is different from everyone else. Something makes Krishna different than everyone else. And of course, Prabhupada would emphasize again and again, that's why He's Krishna, which means everyone's attracted to Him, especially those who love Him. He's the cynosure. He's the point of focus in all of their words and all of their thoughts. at everything that they do. He's supreme in the sense that he's uniquely different and attracts the minds of everyone. So that's my understanding of supreme as in relationship to the previous sentence, not so much that he is supreme, he is the supreme Lord, supreme controller, he is the supreme in all respects in relationship to the creation of the cosmic manifestation. He is the supreme as described in Bhagavad Gita. Everything emanates from him. The devotees are not attracted so much to him because of this, his unique position, which is God. That's not so much there. He is supreme because he's got everyone's minds, words, thoughts, devotion, exclusively fixed on him, even more than themselves. And this is going to be revealed also in some of the verses I wanted to read from today. Because one of the characteristics that we spoke about in the last verse, which is also repeated today, is that there's something about Krishna that draws everyone helplessly to him. Like iron filings are naturally drawn to a magnet. That was the example that was used before. And then the other expression that was given, that there is an attractive force of devotional service to Krishna, which is inconceivable. It works in its own way without having to be understood or even noticed, and somehow it immerses pure devotees in the boundless ocean of Krishna's sweetness and draws them irresistibly to his service. And in this way, only in this way, is the distinction of served and servant maintained forever. So there is specifically a discussion, and there's a lot of details of this discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 26th chapter. It's the chapter entitled Wonderful Krishna. And in this chapter, both within the verses and the commentaries also, this chapter explains what happened in the minds, specifically of the elderly cowherd men, but they also alluded in their statements of others too, when they all witnessed Krishna holding Govardhan Hill for 7 consecutive days. And they had seen many wonderful things prior to that. And they decided, but they decided to talk to Nanda Maharaj and to ask Nanda Maharaj, can you explain what it is about your son that we didn't think about these things before, such as his killing of the Putana witch, or such as the killing of the Shakatasura demon, such as the killing of Bakasura, killing of Dainakasura. And we had assumed that these things happened because some benediction for some Brahmins, possibly, that Krishna had, or possibly maybe because Krishna's your son, and they had various thoughts in their mind at the time which didn't allow them to really give much thought to all these things they had previously seen Krishna do, especially when, again, there's a whole list of them, and they're all described in chapter 26, pulling the twin Arjuna trees down with the being tied to the wooden grinding mortar. That in itself was quite awesome, and the children, they were saying Krishna did it, and they were saying, how's it possible for Krishna to do that? And then the children were saying, no, these two effulgent personalities, they came out from the trees, and so many respects, they saw a lot of wonderful things. That's why the chapter is called Wonderful Krishna. Very wonderful things. But somehow a catalyst happened when they watched Krishna hold Govardhan Hill for 7 days. That was the catalyst. And at this particular point, they decided, well, is he a young 7-year-old boy? I mean, certainly there are certain things that he does that obviously it's not the behavior of someone who's God. I do need a technician here sometimes. yeah, and I'm supposed to remember where I was. Something about Krishna, I was saying, that the cowherd men were saying, that has put us into a state of questioning if he's God. And they asked a question. They asked a question. One of the questions they asked, which was indicative of this, was, yes, because this is connected very much to the verse. They asked, dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Raj cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? Because this is essentially one of the topics of today's verse, is that what is it that makes Krishna all attractive? That you, whatever, even if you try to take your mind away from him, you can't. And what is it about him that captures our affection in such a way that not only is it constant, but it's ever increasing? And that couldn't happen. They're not saying this. Our chayas are saying this. That couldn't happen if they were captivated with Krishna as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that a same affection would be distracted, that they have, because what their affection is in their particular mood, whether it's a parental affection or friendship affection, that affection is ever increasing according to their particular sthayi bhava, their mood. But all of that would be very adversely influenced if all of a sudden he's God. So the cowherd men are now, they want Nanda Maharaj to clear their doubts. Please clear our doubts so that we can understand things properly. And that's essentially what the whole chapter of Wonderful Krishna is about. The whole chapter is about the cowherd men bringing their questions to Nanda Maharaj and asking him, can you please explain this to us so that we can not be in constant thought now that this catalyst has happened of this Govardhan Leela. And of course, as we know, they do get satisfied. They do forget about it. And life goes on in their ever increasingly affectionate way, because that is the nature of the mood of Raj. But nonetheless, I want to read these verses because they're very, very telling and descriptive of the differences between Aishwarya and Madhurya. And by reading them, we'll get an answer to the question that the cowherd men asked, what is it that makes your son so much an object of affection to all of us, not only us, but to the gopis, to his friends, to the birds, to the trees? They all seem to have this continuous, ever-increasing affection for your son. What is it? They want Nanda Maharaj to clear up this doubt and to explain to them why they're thinking this way. And what Nanda Maharaj essentially is going to do, I'll summarize it, although I do want to read the verses. Essentially going to tell them what he heard from Garga Muni. And Garga Muni essentially told him at the name-giving ceremony in such a way that he didn't say that your son is God. He wouldn't do that to Nanda Maharaj. But he did say, don't be surprised if you see that your son does some pretty amazing things. Don't be surprised. And he explains that is because he is empowered to do these amazing things by Lord Narayan, who is Avatari. He is the Narayan, as we've talked many times, Avatari is the source of all avatars. And he's not saying that Krishna is an avatar, but what he is saying is that Lord Narayan empowers others. Don't be surprised if you see that some very wonderful activities performed by your son, which he was empowered to do by Lord Narayan. And in this way, he didn't disclose that he was the real Avatari, the source of Lord Narayan. He didn't disclose that he was God. He kept that from Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj is going to explain what he heard. And he's going to say not only what he heard, but he's going to say, look, I heard it from an authorized source. I'm going to repeat it. And that's the best thing I could do, because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to repeat what we hear from authorized sources. And Garga Muni is an authorized source, and I'm going to tell you what I heard from him. And this happens not only with Nanda Maharaj, it even happens with the gopis. The gopis in the Gopi Gita, they pray in their prayers to Krishna. They even describe him as super soul. They describe him as he was called to descend by Lord Brahma. And they say that in their prayers, glorification of Krishna, while they're feeling separation and feeling his absence. But they're also doing the same thing. It's not that they are dwelling on it. It's not that they are thinking that he's the super soul. They're just simply saying, well, if you're the super soul, as we've heard from Garga Muni and from Purnamasi, then the super soul knows everything that's going on in the heart of everyone. And how is it you don't seem to know how much we're suffering? So that's why they were saying it. We've heard that you're the super soul. But if you're the super soul, how is it you have no idea how much suffering we're feeling in your absence? And that was one of the reasons for calling him super soul. And by saying it, not because they're convinced of it, but they heard it. They heard it. And that's what happens when we see the residents of Vrindavan making such statements about Krishna's divinity. Oftentimes it's because it's what they heard. And they're just repeating it. And that's exactly what Nanda Maharaj is doing with the cowherd man. He's saying to them, I'm going to tell you what I heard directly from Garga Muni. And after explaining all this to them, he's thinking that their doubts will be cleared and then they'll be able to fully understand why Krishna does some pretty amazing things. But he's going to try to convince them in such a way, he's going to try to convince them that not only is he my son, which is what Garga Rishi told me, but he's your son too. And he's everyone's. He's all of your sons. And they're going to continue, after hearing all of these arguments, in their parental affection with him as their son. So I'm giving a little bit of a background to these verses. But I wanted to read some of the commentaries. This is chapter 26, Wonderful Krishna. First verse. The cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows. This is Sarat Darshanitika, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In this chapter, Nanda Maharaj describes Krishna's opulences as he heard of them from Garga Muni in order to remove the doubts of the cowherd men about Krishna's powers. Because all the Vrajavasis were immersed in tasting the sweetness of Krishna while he lifted Govardhan Hill, the opportunity to think about Krishna's astonishing power did not arise. In other words, it didn't happen during Govardhan Leela. Everyone was just relishing the sweetness, as really described by many of our acharyas, and definitely described in many ways by Kavi Kanapur and Ananda Vrindavan Champu, what kind of experiences the gopis were having, the cowherd boys were having, the cowherd men were having, and the different playful statements they were making about, you know, Krishna. It's now it's not possible that Krishna's holding up Govardhan Hill. We're doing it, and Madhu Mangal was suggesting that he had chanted a mantra, and because of his mantra, the hill was staying afloat on Krishna's hand. And the cowherd men, they were there with their sticks holding up the hill, and everyone was thinking it was because of the cowherd men they helped Krishna. That's why it made it look like it was so easy for Krishna to hold the hill. And Mother Jasoda, her sweetness of her relationship with Krishna was thinking that my son hasn't eaten for days. Look how skinny he's getting. He's starving. We have to give him some. Can somebody help him hold the hill for a while so I can give him something to eat? And she's manifesting her motherly, you know, distress at the fact that she's personally witnessing now, over many days have passed, that Krishna hasn't eaten. She's looking at him saying, look at how skinny he is. We have to give me a chance to please give him something. But how can I get him to eat something unless you help him? So in all these different ways, all the residents, and of course, the gopis, and especially Krishna was exchanging glances with the gopis, and Balaram was especially taking note that Krishna was glancing at Srimati Radharani, who happened to be present. And as we've many times described before, that this is the one Leela where everyone was present in one place for 7 consecutive days while Krishna was holding up the hill. Well, under ordinary circumstances, these are all unseen, but they were all together at that time, and Balaram was noticing, and Krishna's glances, and Radharani was casting her glances, and everybody and others were noticing something that was going on there. But this was all taking place, and everyone was just relishing the sweetness of the pastime. Nobody was thinking at that time that, hey, how is Krishna holding up this heel? And that's the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning here, that all the Vrajavasis were so immersed in tasting the sweetness of Krishna while he lifted Govardhan Hill, the opportunity to think about Krishna's astonishing power did not arise. Afterwards, when they had returned to their homes, they all began to have a doubt. Thus they thought, now we have directly seen child Krishna lift Govardhan Hill, and we remember how he killed Putana and other demons, extinguished the forest fire, and so on. At that time, we thought that these extraordinary acts occurred because of a benediction from the Brahmins, or because of Nanda Maharaj's great fortune, or that perhaps this boy had achieved the mercy of Lord Narayan and was thus empowered by him. But all these presumptions are false, because an ordinary 7-year-old boy could never hold up the king of mountains for 7 whole days. Krishna is not a human being. He must be the Supreme Lord himself. But on the other hand, this is back and forth. On the other hand, child Krishna loves it when we coddle him. And he becomes morose when we, his father, mother, aunts, uncles, and well-wishers, simply worldly cowherd men, do not give him attention. In other words, this is also in sync a lot with what we spoke about in our last class to the Russian-speaking devotees. We were speaking from We were quoting a verse from the Vishnu Yamala about 18 faults that don't exist in God. And although they don't exist in God, in Krishna they do. And the explanation is because, and that's why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Bhakta Vatsalya is understood, should not be seen as a dushanam, as a fault, but it's a bhushanam, that it's the most wonderful ornament of Krishna. It's what makes Krishna most attractive. And what is this ornament of Krishna that makes him most attractive? Is that how he reciprocates the mood of the devotees who love him with friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love in the most unique way that cannot be done by God. It can only be done by Krishna. So we read about some of the, we didn't go through all the 18 faults that don't exist in God. One of them is that we spoke about is how God is never bewildered. And then Rupa Goswami, or Jiva Goswami, excuse me, quotes a verse where during the Brahma Vamohana Leela, when Krishna was looking for the calves and the cowherd boys, and he came back and looked, and he was looking for the calves, and he came back and looked for the cowherd boys, he was bewildered. He didn't know where to look next. And he was looking and looking as if he was bewildered, although he knew exactly where they were. But he looked, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that, or Jiva Goswami, excuse me, says, the reason why he looked bewildered is he wanted to make Brahma think that he was bewildered, because that's what Brahma wanted to do. So that's why he started looking, but he knew exactly where they were. But he looked bewildered because Brahma wanted to see him bewildered. And that's what he wanted to show Brahma at that particular time. Later, he's going to show Brahma a lot more. And then another example he gave is how Krishna seemed to make a mistake. And then he gave the example from the Bhagavatam how when Krishna and Balaram heard the jingling of ankle bells, they thought they were coming from some other residence. And they started to walk towards those residents to think that's where the jingling of the ankle bells were coming from. And then when they realized, hey, they're not coming from there, and then they turned around and went back. And said, so now how, Krishna and Balaram, how could they make a mistake? But he explains that it appeared they made a mistake, but that was simply to enhance the mood of Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj in this way, because they are thinking, look at my son. He's going there thinking that this is where the sound is coming from, but as he got closer, he saw that, no, it's not coming from there, so he turns around and he comes over this way. So he gave so many different examples. So same thing here. The cowherd men are saying, on the other hand, Krishna loves it when we coddle him. And he becomes morose when we don't give him attention, you know, which is like a young child who's always interested in grabbing attention becomes very morose if he can't get the center of attention. So they're thinking his behavior is like an ordinary child. But how do we reconcile his behavior like an ordinary child when it looks like he was God by holding up the hill like this? So they're thinking this way now. So another statement. He says he appears to become hungry and thirsty. How's God, who's Aptarama, Atmarama and Aptakama, who's always satisfied, never hankers for anything, and fully self-satisfied, how is he hungry and thirsty? He steals yogurt and milk, sometimes plays tricks, blatantly tells lies. He chatters childishly and tends the calves. If he is actually the Supreme Lord, why would he do these things? Don't they indicate that he is an ordinary human child? So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's bringing us into the same dichotomy. You know, how is it? Because this is what they're coming into right now, right? For the first time, they're coming into this. He looks like an ordinary child. And at the same time, how did he hold the hill up for 7 days? So we are totally unable to establish the truth of Krishna's identity. Therefore, let us go and inquire from the highly intelligent king of Raj, Nanda Maharaj. And he shall free us from our doubts. Thinking in this way, the cowherd man entered Nanda Maharaj's great assembly hall and questioned him, as described in the following verse. The cowherd man said, since this boy performs such extraordinary activities, how could he warrant a birth among worldly men like us? A birth that for him would seem contemptible. So here's another doubt. As we've oftentimes said, the residents of Goloka, the residents of Braj, they think they're ordinary human beings. Why, with such an exalted personality, be with us all the time? We're such ordinary people. So we need Nanda Maharaj to clear up this doubt. So the cowherd men said, since this boy has performed such astonishing activities, he cannot be an ordinary boy, but he must be God. But if that is so, how could he be born in a cowherd family and become the object of criticism? Even the minor avatars are not born in such low family as ours. What to speak of outstanding avatars? The use of the word asau to denote Krishna indicates that he was not present because he had gone to the forest. The full expression of their feelings could not take place. The full expression of their feelings could take place only in Krishna's absence. In other words, they could never say this in front of Krishna. Krishna had already gone to the forest. Then they asked, how could this 7-year-old boy playfully hold up the great hill, Govardhan Hill, with one hand, just as a mighty elephant holds up a lotus flower? And now they're going to go through a whole list. And while we're at it, now we're starting to think about all these things that we saw before, such as how did Krishna, who is a mere infant, who hardly yet even opened up his eyes, how could he drink the breast milk of Putana and suck out her life air, just as the force of time sucks out the youth of one's body? Good analogy. (Clears throat) And then they go through everyone, every single example. Putana, Sakatasura, what we saw. Now we're starting to wonder about what we saw about that. He's kicking up at his feet, killing the Sakatasura demon. And what about Janavata? You know, he was hardly even walking at that time. He was still crawling. And somehow his weights seemed to somehow take care of this Janavata demon and kill him. And then when he was tied by the ropes of his mother to a wooden grinding mortar, then he pulled down the pair of Arjuna trees. And now we're starting to think about that. And then what about the time when it seems like he got rid of a forest fire and in a very mystical way? And what about that? And what about the Vatsasura calf demon and when Krishna killed him and threw him? And what about the bifurcation of the beak of Bakasura? And what about the Pralambasura, that it seems that Balaram got the strength from Krishna to deal with him? And what about Kaliya? And then after all of these things, they said, how is it that we and all the other residents of Raj can't give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? In the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the wonderful activities of the child were given as evidence to prove that Krishna is God. In this verse, the cowherd men speak to show how they are all united in their devotional feelings towards Krishna. They said, though Krishna is your child, not ours, our loving affection toward him is very strong. We have parental affection for him. The boys have brotherly love for him. And all the male and female birds and forest animals have strong affection for Krishna too. In all cases, that affection is increasing in newer ways at every moment. Our attraction is natural, and we cannot give it up, even though we now see that Krishna has the qualities of God. One has more affection for one's own body than wealth and children, and more affection for one's soul than one's own body, and more affection for the Paramatma than one's own soul. Thus, Krishna must be Paramatma. Otherwise, such affection could not be possible if Krishna were a mere human being. This is how they're thinking. In fact, this verse is also used in Chaitanya Bhagavat when Advaita Acharya, when he was teaching and Vishwaroop was present, and young Nimai came on the request of his mother to bring Vishwaroop back home. And when Nimai came and Advaita Acharya saw him and everyone else who was present saw him, young Nimai, they all became stunned. They didn't know in any way his divinity. And they became stunned and they began questioning, what is it that makes me so attractive to this young child? And the verse that Vrindavan Das Thakur quotes in reference to this was this verse from the Bhagavatam, that the reason why is because he's even more attractive than even one's own self. because he is the source of everyone. And therefore, because of that reason, Advaita Acharya was so feeling so attracted to Nimai, not knowing why he was so attracted to him. So Nanda Maharaj replied, but if you conclude that Krishna is the Paramatma, then how is it possible for Paramatma to have such natural attraction towards the Vrajavasis and the animals of the forest? Being the self-satisfied Paramatma, Krishna should be indifferent to everything. How could he feel such constant love for us who are absorbed in material life? Again, this dilemma. How is it we're so attracted? And at the same time, how is it that he looks like an ordinary boy that we're attracted to? So they're going back and forth and they're looking to Nanda Maharaj. Can you please, explain? So Nanda Maharaj replies, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy. Now he's going to quote Garga Muni. This is what Garga Muni told me. He said that your son appears in every millennium in different colors. He's assumed other colors, white, red, and yellow. Now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudev. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. They are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokul, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only, you will surpass all difficulties. And then I wanted to read something else. This is Sanatan Goswami. He says, also as an explanation to the verse, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braj cannot give up our constant affection for your son? How is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old. On the other hand, we see that he has lifted the great Govardhan Hill. Therefore, O King of Raj, a doubt about your son arises within us. Nanda Maharaj replied, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy. Commentary. Fearing there would be a decrease in affection because of fear and respect and realizing that Krishna was the Lord, by directly revealing that he had directly appeared to display unlimited qualities of the Lord, Garga Muni had not directly stated Krishna's supreme position of power. Nanda informed the cowherds by Garga's words, which he understood to mean that Krishna was a child, but had some extraordinary qualities similar to the Lord. You should hear my words, which are potent, since I heard them from Garga. Your doubts should disappear about this boy. He makes it understood that Krishna is his child by using the word Arbhake. Or your doubts about your son should disappear. To increase their affection for Krishna, he identifies Krishna as their son as well as his. Hear what Garga said concerning this son of mine. By using the word Enam, he speaks as if Krishna were present, though he was actually absent, since he was the object of great attraction for them and was present in their hearts at all times. By repeating words like Arbhake and Kumaram, he indicates that Krishna is none other than his son. So, again, he's giving, Garga Muni didn't tell Nanda Maharaj, your son is God. He ended his whole explanation that actually he will simply perform great activities because he has been empowered to perform great activities by Lord Narayan. And when all the residents heard this, then they understood. Yes, he's our son. Everything we thought about him before, as an ordinary child, now we understand he's an ordinary child, but sometimes he does very wonderful things because he's also extraordinary, because the Supreme Lord Narayan acts through him to do extraordinary things. So they felt that this fully pacified them, fully satisfied them. They didn't need to hear anything else. And they went about their usual affairs and they forgot about the whole thing. They were fully satisfied by the words that Nanda Maharaj repeated to them from what they heard, from what he heard from Garga Muni. Again, which is another statement, as I've made in the very beginning, that whenever the residents of Braj think in such a way, temporarily, it's just surfaces, they think in such a way. We gave different pastimes before, how when the cowherd men also, when they saw, when they heard that Nanda Maharaj saw Krishna worshipped by Varuna, they started again asking about it. And then Krishna showed them, Vaikuntha showed them Brahman and showed them their place, their residence, and showed them how great they were. And then after they saw all that, they just simply became fully satisfied. We're in the best place. We're just with Krishna, and that's all we need to know. And they completely forgot that they had asked the question. Completely didn't come up again. It doesn't stick. It doesn't stick. And as we explained before, we've given this analogy, you know, that's like I heard it from Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj. I can't remember the source he got it, but how that when the devotees are experiencing their ecstatic love for Krishna, that sometimes thoughts about his divinity will surface. But it doesn't stick. It doesn't stay. And it's compared to be just like if you put a blade of grass in boiling milk. The boiling milk is continuously boiling. And most of the time it's below the surface. But sometimes, as it boils, it comes up. But the boiling continues, and it goes below the surface again. So in the same way, that this is exactly what happens to them, is that sometimes a thought will surface, but it doesn't stick. And Nanda Maharaj was fully able to pacify them, satisfy them with his explanation from what he heard from Garga Muni, that he performs these wonderful things, wonderful activities, because I was told at the name-giving ceremony by Garga Muni that Narayan would act through him. And he's still my son. And if Narayan acts through him, this makes him even more wonderful. But he's still my son, and that's not going to change. And he even tells them, but he's your son too. And you should think of him in that way too. And your affection for him as your son will ever be ever increasing. And this ever sweet relationship that always increases more and more and more and makes him all more lovable, even when he seems to do wonderful things. Because he's always doing these wonderful things. And just like, you know, the example we give, that when Mother Jasoda sees the demigods throwing flower petals, she thinks, how wonderful is my son? Just look how much the demigods like him. They're throwing flower petals on him. And as we talked about in the past, you know, when the demigods, we were reading from Govinda Lilamrita, and the demigods had come nearby, and Lord Shiva, Brahma, they were in the sky, and they were offering praise to Krishna, and they were glorifying him in so many different ways as being the supreme, and they were worshiping him in reverence and awe in their prayers of him, and how they were feeling so very fortunate, you know, that Krishna glanced at them. Although with his cows, Krishna was calling each cow one by one by name. He was embracing them. He was giving them so much attention. But the demigods, they simply got a casual glance and a smile, and the demigods were satisfied. And they saw how much Krishna was relishing being with his cows and with his cowherd boyfriends. They thought, we've been here long enough. Maybe we should leave and let him just be alone with his cows and his friends. And the cowherd boys, and they spoke up when the demigods left, and they said, what nonsense those they said. They said that Krishna killed the demons. They speak, what's foolish nonsense? We know Krishna didn't kill the demons. We just know that Narayan, he acted through Krishna, you know, because to make Krishna do wonderful things, that Krishna doesn't kill demons. And they were mocking the demigods' prayers. And they were laughing in this way. So this is how they think, that it's very wonderful. This is how Jasoda thinks when she sees the petals coming from the sky. Wonderful is my son. The cowherd boys think, how wonderful is my friend. And gopis, they feel how wonderful Krishna is, that it acts in such a way to increase their spontaneous affection and love towards him. And nothing sticks. Nothing sticks. And such is the nature of Goloka, where Yoga Maya acts in such a way that Madhurya is always prominent in Goloka, and Aishwarya is covered by Madhurya, even though it's there, but it's covered. Whereas in Vaikuntha, Aishwarya is prominent and covers the sweetness. So this is what makes Krishna ever increasingly attractive to the residents of Raj, And what makes Krishna so attractive, so sweet, so compelling, that their affection towards him, because he's always doing wonderful things. He's always doing wonderful things. It's not that just chapter 8, wonderful Krishna, is this the only time that Krishna did something wonderful. It's just, you know, that's, it's just a reconfirmation that to everything they see in Krishna is wonderful. And it's just a reconfirmation in their heart that by his wonderful activities, our affection for him is always increasing. Always increasing. So there's no question of it ever becoming anything less than ever increasing, because these pastimes are eternal. They're always going on. They're eternally manifest. They're happening again and again. And even though it happens again and again and it repeats again and again, nobody ever thinks that it happened before. And I'm seeing it again. And it's such as the nature of Krishna's compelling, very sweet pastimes, which increases the affection of his devotees in such a way that they always increase their love for him. And ultimately, which this verse is all about, they're serving him in the way he likes to be served the best. They're serving him in the way he likes to be served the best. He likes it more than anything else when his friends jump on his shoulders and consider him to be an equal, when his mother chastises him, and when the gopis rebuke him and chastise him for his, steals his mind away from the reverential hymns of the Vedas. This is what he likes. This is how he likes to be served. He doesn't want to always to be served as God, to be worshipped as supreme, to be somebody who's the supreme reservoir of all opulences. Oftentimes, I use this simple example that even in the mundane sense, that a person who's very, very wealthy and is always seen for his wealth, then he really never knows who his friends are. Because if he's so wealthy, then he's always going to question, are they my friend because of my wealth? Or are they my friend? You know, of course, Krishna knows. He knows exactly what's in everyone's heart, and he knows why somebody's praising him, glorifying him. He knows if somebody wants something from him. But Krishna is much more attracted to those who don't see his opulences, who simply see him as their lover, simply as their friend. And they love him for one reason only. Not because of his wealth, not because of his opulence, not because of his God. Because he's Krishna. And those who render service in that loving, spontaneous mood, then that's the type of service which is most attractive to Krishna. And that's why it's described here in the verse today that only by this deep appreciation of Krishna's supremacy can his most fortunate devotees sustain their exalted love for him and share intimate exchanges with him in the ecstatic tastes of transcendental ras. And then also, as we read in the previous verse, yet somehow it immerses pure devotees in the boundless ocean of Krishna's sweetness and draws them irresistibly to his service. Only in this way is the distinction of served and servant maintained forever. So we'll stop there. I'm going to stop because I've been sitting too long. And I will best to not chant japa. And we'll end here. And thank you very much. And we'll resume on Monday with text 200. Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.